Hey, Marlins fans, this is Big Fish Small Pod for Friday, March 29th, 2024, presented by MPT College Consulting. Eli Sussman hosting this one for you. Just one game down for the Marlins, still 161 to go, but this wasn't any ordinary game. Opening day, 6-5 loss to the Pirates in 12 innings. It was a fascinating game, one that I felt merited its own deep dive, or at least however deep we can dive in 10 minutes or less here on the Small Pod.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I wanted to break this down into the good, the bad, and the ugly from a Marlins perspective on Thursday against the Pirates, starting off with the good. And you skip ahead pretty close to the end here to get to that good. Right-hander Declan Cronin, pretty anonymous player, even entering Marlins spring training, but somebody that pretty early on from those first live batting practice sessions in Jupiter was raising some eyebrows and catching attention, made the Marlins opening day roster. He ends up entering this game in the 10th inning, tie game, and he was incredible for the last three innings of this game. It was both his sinker and his slider that were performing at elite levels. The slider in terms of missing bats, the sinker, the way that he was commanding it and stealing strikes with it was awesome. So he goes three innings. It only took him 32 pitches. Incredible efficiency. Is one of the longest outings of Cronin's career at any level of his pro career. Not just the majors, but any level for a guy that has been a reliever. And he is still a reliever, but one that showed a considerable amount of versatility and upside with his performance here, with how nasty his stuff looked. So he takes the loss, even though you could argue he was the best pitcher that the Marlins used in the entire game, such as the imprecision of a pitching decision and how that is sent out, especially in this era of automatic runner on second base and extra innings. Another thing good offensively for the Marlins, they did put up five runs in just really the first half of this game, getting contributions up and down the lineup, including some brand new players like Tim Anderson coming through with an RBI double. In this game, Jake Berger, three runs batted in, same that he had, matching his single game high as a Marlin in 2023. As a whole, the team only struck out seven times in 12 innings. Seven strikeouts for a regulation game is good by major league standards, but to do it with those additional three innings latched on, that was the strength of this team last year, one of the few positives about their offense, and there's a chance to be once again this year. So that was an important, a bright, encouraging thing, and made it all the more surprising that they lost the game considering how dominant at times their pitching was and yet how good they were putting balls in play themselves and yet scoring one fewer run than the Pirates did. Now getting to the bad, we could start with Sixto Sanchez, who as a whole I did not think was, like, he wasn't ugly in his whole outing, but when you put all the circumstances together, including Skip Schumacher's role in this as well, I'm kind of bundling together Skip's handling of the bullpen with the way that the actual performance of that bullpen was. So Sixto Sanchez, we've been following this story very closely throughout spring, really is inspiring that he's made it back to the majors after 3.5 years in the wilderness, coming back from his shoulder issues. In this inning, he hits 98 miles per hour. He gets three pretty routine ground balls, but before that, on the second pitch he threw to O'Neill Cruz, he gives up what was at the time a game-tying home run in the eighth inning that made it a 5-5 game. It was a relatively well-placed pitch, but one of the concerns I've had about Sixto coming back is his fastball. Even when the velocity is above average, the spin rate on that pitch is not. So, like, as a whole, his four-seamer averaged barely 2,000 revolutions per minute during this outing. That is like bottom 10th percentile of all major league fastballs, at least going off of 2023's numbers. So I'll be interested in running that a little more closely. His it just means that his fastball is kind of more hittable than the velocity would suggest, especially when he keeps it elevated. If you have a high spin fastball and you elevate it, then you have a chance at getting it above the barrel of somebody's bat. But with his particular type of pitch, this was somewhat of a mislocation that I think he wanted it a lot lower than it ended up being. And then there's Skip's involvement in this with Sixto, where even though he had earned a spot on this roster heading into the year, considering the alternatives, it should not have been the plan to put him into this kind of situation where he is being relied upon in a high leverage situation, extremely high leverage, eighth inning, just a one run lead, and facing a guy that has great power potential in O'Neill Cruz. So he was put in a very tough spot right there. And you'd like to think that this could be managed a little bit differently. If Luzardo had the green light to pitch one more inning, then perhaps it'd be easier to bridge the gap between him and Tanner Scott at the end of the game and not have to put Sixto in that spot fresh off this this comeback and still at a point where he's still getting his footing as a reliever. Also in the bad category, I would point to some lousy throws from the left side of the infield to first base. This is including both Tim Anderson and Jake Berger, at least three throws overall that really shouldn't have, but landed in the dirt and just created unnecessarily difficult pick opportunities for Josh Bell at first base. Even when Anderson and Berger, in these cases, they either had the chance to set their feet or their momentum going towards first base. I have expressed my concerns about the quality of the infield defense in particular with this team, and this first game really did nothing to alleviate those concerns. I think that is going to be a problem over the course of the season. Now getting to the ugly, the mistakes that really doomed the Marlins in this one, it was how the offense totally disappeared the entire second half of the game. 6 1/3 innings against Pirates relievers. They had one hit in 6 1/3 against six different relievers in here, including some no names, with all due respect. And what was weird, as I mentioned earlier, like they were putting so many balls in play. So it wasn't that they were being overpowered by guys. It's just that everything was on the ground, it seems like. In particular, a lot of pulled ground balls were the approach that the hitters had was just not appropriate for these situations, especially when you're coming up to bat with runners on base. And in all those, they took a lead into the later innings. They never trailed until the 12th inning, until they fell behind for good at the very end. These were situations where simply using the whole field would be really valuable, where the difference between a ground ball double play and a line drive elsewhere would have been the entire difference between winning and losing. And I thought these hitters were settling for undesirable pitches, and they were paying the price for it with a lot of weak, unproductive contact. Also in the ugly, you need to call out specifically Luis Arraez going 0-for-6 for the first time ever. In his entire major league career, Arraez had never been 0-for-6 in a single game. He'd never gotten out that many times without recording a hit. So this was an anomaly for him. Doesn't have any meaning beyond the single game. I'm not saying that. It is something still to call out, though, that if they had gotten just anything from him in those six at-bats, that also could have been the difference between pushing across a run, an insurance run, or a winning run in those later innings and not doing so. The fact that they got absolutely nothing from Arraez at the plate, with him being, as you know, the defending NL batting champ and previously the AL batting champ, he's somebody that even on his bad days, you expect him to get on at least one time, and he did not do that on opening day. So I think that is going to sum it up. A 92% win probability in the middle of the sixth inning, and the Marlins end up losing it. For a team that dominated in one-run games in 2023, they end up ironically losing their very first game in one-run fashion here in 2024. So looking ahead to game two of the season on Friday, AJ Puck. If you've been following my coverage closely, you know I am really encouraged by what Puck showed in spring training. He has a fatigued bullpen behind him. I don't know if there's any circumstance where he really pitches deep into the game, but more importantly, you're going to be looking for what his effectiveness is, whether he can really translate as a reliever to a starter, and whether his expanded pitch mix is able to get him two times and three times through an opposing lineup with some success. The Pirates will be using Martin Perez, the veteran lefty, as their starter. So you're going to see a slightly different Marlins lineup in this one. Should see the first Marlins start for Christian Bethencourt and perhaps a couple other changes in that lineup from what we saw on opening day. We're at this point in the season where you just cannot overreact to individual games. I think every new bit of information we get is really interesting and worth diving into. But despite the loss on Thursday, it was really enjoyable, at least for me, just to have meaningful baseball back. And I always prefer those really close games over blowouts. I know some people maybe feel a little bit differently about that. So game two coming right up. The small pod returning again on Monday and every weekday throughout this 2024 regular season, just like all our other Fish on First podcast content presented by MPT College Consulting. Check them out, mptcollegeconsulting.com. I've been Eli Sussman. Enjoy your weekends and go fish.